You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Let's go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline right now. OBM, Ohio Business Machine, preferred copier of the Cleveland Browns with all the X's and O's for your office. Call 216-485-2000 or visit ohiobusinessmachines.com. Today we go to the hotline and bring in John Costco from Pro Football Focus. John, welcome to the show.
Hey, Nathan, Matt, thanks for having me again. Exciting time in Cleveland.
Yeah, we got, of course, the Indians looking to clinch the World Series tonight at First Progressive Field. You've got the Cavs are in town, and, of course, the Browns got some good news yesterday, receiving Jamie Collins, getting Cody Kessler and Corey Coleman back. But, John, let's start with Jamie Collins. You and I were talking earlier today, and one of the things that people really don't realize is that not only is he a tackling machine, led the Patriots in tackles last 2 years, highly graded at Pro Football Focus, I'll let you get into that. But let's start with how he's been actually as a pass rusher, something he wasn't asked to do a lot of in New England but was very effective at.
Yeah, he is extremely effective at it. And you look at what he does on a per-snap basis, his career pass rushing productivity is higher than that of J.J. Watt and Von Miller. And it's not an apples-to-apples comparison, obviously, because those guys are rushing the passer every single down. But when he does rush the passer, he gets to the quarterback. He has 14 career sacks, 18 hits, and 40 hurries on just 297 pass rush snaps. And so what he does on a per-snap basis, he ranks in the top 10. Every single year, he ranks second in 2014, fourth in 2015. This year is at 11th, but he's still, you know, he hasn't been asked to rush the passer very often this year, just 40 times. So he is extremely effective getting to the quarterback.
When you look at Jamie Collins overall, this is a guy who's been near the top of your grades at the linebacker position every year that he's been in the NFL. What is it about his game that stands out to you guys at Pro Football Focus that has made him so effective, and what kind of player are the Browns getting?
He is obviously a highly athletic, gifted athlete, but what he does is he makes plays. You know, he steps up in the biggest stages in the playoffs, and he just, you know, he makes plays. He gets interceptions. He gets, you know, big-time sacks. He forces a lot of fumbles. You know, you look at him in coverage. He hasn't allowed a touchdown in coverage in the regular season since week 9 of 2014. So not only is he rushing the passer and getting pressure that way, when he's asked to cover tight ends, running backs, slot receivers, wide receivers, he's shutting them down too. He has a passer rating of 57.1 when he's been targeted this year. So he can line up anywhere, on the edge. He lines up over in the slot, out wide, in the middle. No matter where he's at, he's making plays and just being a productive player.
And, John, jumping off of Jamie Collins here for a minute, and we all know that the addition to him to the Cleveland Browns is going to be something special for this defense, but diving into the Browns' performance against the New York Jets, some very good in the first half, not so much in the second half. Who were some of the top performers in the eyes of Pro Football Focus for the Browns this past weekend?
Yeah, for five straight weeks now, the offensive line has been really solid in pass protection. They've allowed 4 sacks, 10 hits, 38 hurries on 225 pass snaps for a 7th best pass blocking efficiency. This is compared to the first 3 weeks where they allowed 5 sacks, 9 hits, and 25 hurries on just 111 pass pro snaps, which was the 3rd worst in the NFL in their pass blocking efficiency. You know, you had Joe Thomas, he only gave up 1 hurry. He was strong in pass protection. John Greco, again, had a really strong game in both pass protection and run blocking. And even Austin Pastor, who now, since, you know, his struggles in the first 3 weeks of the season, he grades as the best right tackle after that period in all of the NFL. He only gave up 1 hurry in this game. He gave up 1 hurry last week as well. So the offensive line and pass protection was really strong. But then you also look at Duke Johnson in receiving. He graded really well. And then Terrell Pryor, you know, he had a couple of drops, but outside of those drops was obviously very productive. And then even Andrew Hawkins had the most targets he's had in over 2 years since, his first full season with the Browns. So those guys on the offensive side were really strong. And you look on the defensive side, Colin Nassib had a monster game. He had three hurries and three batted passes, which he now in the NFL ranks second of all players with batted passes. Something that I looked at with him, he seems to be much better now, you know, comfortable with his hand, and his hand must be healed, because you look at week one, he had his best game of the year then, which this past week trumped that, but he stood up on the edge. He was at the outside linebacker position 13 times, and he was on the ground 33 times. Since that game, he had only stood up 8 total times, but then this game, he was on the edge standing up 14 times. So that shows me that he's much more comfortable with his play right now, and his hand is healed. So I'd expect big things coming forward from him in terms of that. He also, Jamie Meter also had a really strong game. He had one hit, two hurries, 7 tackles, and 4 stops. From a defensive tackle position, having that many tackles is pretty impressive. Danny Shelton, he announced his second career sack. He had a hurry and 3 stops. Even Cam Johnson, he had his best game of his career, and even better than the game he had 2 sacks against Washington. In that game, he struggled in the run game. In this one, he had 2 hits and held his own in the run game. He was able to set the edge pretty well. And then you look at Jamar Taylor. Outside of the one 57-yard pass that he gave up to Quincy Enunwa, which he was expecting safety help on because it was in a cover 4, the safety bit down on the play action there. He had 4 passes defensed and allowed, just the three catches. So there were a lot of good spots in it. Obviously, the Jets just essentially made more plays in the second half, and that's what it was.
When you look at this team, you single out a lot of the things that have been good, but you also look back and of the lowest graded guys in this game against the Jets, you have Derek Kindred, Joe Hayden, Ibrahim Campbell, and Tracy Howard as 4 of your 5 lowest graded guys, guys that are basically on the field for the majority of the game in that secondary. And would you say that is, that the defensive front is actually doing better than people expect, but it's the back end that has been worse than people expect?
Yeah, the back end has been really bad, and it looks worse than it is because they're getting beat for some big pass plays. The linebacking core hasn't been really strong either in run defense outside of Christian Kirksey. You've got a lot of pieces that are struggling, and it's obviously everything takes a total team effort. If you have one guy just missing on something, it doesn't look good for the defense. So yeah, Derek Kindred, he'd actually be, he struggles in pass coverage because he was biting on a lot of play action early in the season, and he struggled in this game, but most of his struggles come from missed tackles. He has 9 on the season. Tremont Williams, he was okay in this past game, but he's just lost a step, and, when you're in position to make a play and you're just not making it, his old age is showing up to him. Ibrahim Campbell, he's been great in run defense. He actually ranks 4th in run stop percentage among safeties. His coverage has struggled for sure.
And John, of course, a very good opponent coming to town in the Dallas Cowboys. Offensive line great, Ezekiel Elliott great, Dak Prescott at this point right now probably competing with his teammate Ezekiel Elliott for Rookie of the Year there in the NFC East on the offensive side. But talk to us more about who the Cowboys are. Dez Bryant back as well for them.
Yeah, so like you said, they have one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. Outside of their right tackle position of Doug Free. With Doug Free, that's a spot where the Browns should be able to get a good pass rush on him. He's allowed 4 sacks, 5 hits, and 18 hurries, and grades as one of the worst right tackles in the NFL. So if Nassib, who typically lines up on the left side, he should have potentially a good game against them. Cole Beasley has been really strong this year out of the slot position. He grades as the best slot receiver in the NFL this year. And he has 37 catches for 443 yards, 3 touchdowns, and forced a couple of missed tackles as well. So he's been very productive there. Obviously, Dez Bryant, he's battling back from an injury, but as you saw in the Sunday night game, he was very productive. He was very strong. And even though he just had 4 catches, they were for 113 yards and a touchdown. So that, you know, when you got Dak Prescott, who's playing extremely well, a lot better than any of us expected at Pro Football Focus in his rookie year, you know, he's got two legit weapons to throw to, and he also got Jason Witten, who's one of the best tight ends. You know, he's probably got a future Hall of Fame written on him, but their offense is playing extremely well. And Dak Prescott, he's benefiting from a very good offensive line where when he's kept clean, he grades as the third best passer in passer rating of 116.5. But when he's pressured, it does drop a lot to 63.3 passer rating, which is 19th in the NFL.
When you look at this team in terms of just overall performance, would you say that the offense, given all the injuries, et cetera, has been much better than expected, and the defense has been worse than expected, and that if the Browns can get that defensive level up a little bit, that they have a chance to maybe win some games here down the stretch?
Yeah, absolutely. When you score 28 points in a game, you know, which they did against the Jets, you'd expect to win that game. So when, you know, the defense, they played, you know, as well as you possibly could play in the first half of that game. But essentially, Brandon Marshall and Ryan Fitzpatrick found their groove and were able to connect on a lot of really tight coverage throws and just made the plays. I am surprised that the offense has done as well as it has, considering all the injuries that they've had. I think, you know, obviously you're going to get a good boost with Corey Coleman coming back, and I'd expect Cody Kessler to start this week because he's shown that he's been very good. He has, you know, he's better, he's more accurate. It shows in the adjusted completion percentage where he ranks eighth in the NFL there, but when he's under pressure, he ranks first. So, you know, the offense has definitely overperformed, and I think that's to, you know, credit Hugh Jackson for that, where he's scheming a lot of great plays for the team to make yards. On the other side, yeah, the defense has struggled with, you know, having Joe Hayden get hurt has a lot of uncertainty in the back end. And then you've had Jordan Poyer, who, you know, is a veteran presence back there. Even though he hasn't played too many snaps at the safety position, he's still a veteran on that team, and that really hurts to lose a guy like that.
John, when you go, we're halfway through the year, we're going to do our midseason awards tomorrow here on this show. Who would you say has been the offensive MVP for the Browns, and who has been the defensive MVP?
Well, defensive MVP is easy for me, and that's Danny Shelton. I mean, he's been the most consistent player week in, week out. He's graded positively in every single game. He grades as one of the best run-stuffing defensive tackles in the NFL. He's at third in the NFL, I think, right now, and he still has, still leads the league in run stops, and he's second in run stop percentage. So, what his improvement from rookie year to this year is pretty drastic, and he should easily get that. Now, on the offensive side, the best player has been Joe Thomas. You could argue that Cody Kessler could get it because he's how well he's played. You could argue for Isaiah Correll, but Correll only, you know, he had a four game stretch where he really played well, and he hasn't found that same success. So, I think you have to give it to Joe Thomas. You know, you can throw Terrell Pryor in there as well. He's been extremely good at, you know, receiving in the receiving game, and he grades a top 10 of our receiving grades. But because of how good Joe Thomas has been, I think you give it to him.
All right, John. Last question, just one more reiteration, because people on Twitter cannot believe this and want to verify that you said that Mitch Austin Pastore has been the best right tackle by Pro Football Focus since when?
Since week four till now.
From week four till now, he has been the best right tackle, according to Pro, ahead of guys like Mitchell Schwartz.
Mitchell Schwartz has been really good too.
Yes.
He grades better than Mitchell Schwartz. His run, Mitchell Schwartz's run blocking has been not as good as Pastore's. So, exactly. Pastore has been, you know, outside of the, you know, I think he was just adjusting to, you know, the new team, or not the new team, but the new position, new coaching scheme, and everything like that. And he's been really great after that. I mean, I know everybody likes to look. It's similar to how when Schwartz, his first game ever, he gave up four sacks or something like that, and everybody says, "Oh, this guy's no good." This one game doesn't make or break a player like that. So, you know, I do want to say before I get off here this move by signing Jamie Collins really helped DeMario Davis. So last year, weeks 1 through 11 with the Jets, he was a full-time starter. He graded as an 87th out of 91 linebackers. He was really bad. When they demoted him to a part-time role where he was just a run-stopping linebacker, he graded as a 16th best linebacker, and his run defense grade was 5th best. So if he can stay in a part-time role with Collins coming in for the coverage and the pass rushing, I think you see an improved DeMario Davis because Collins' presence right there.
And certainly hope that you do get to see that. John, we appreciate the time as always. Check him out on Twitter at PFFJohn_Costco, and he is our guy with us every single Tuesday to give you the story behind the story here about the numbers, what the Browns are doing. And again, it's PFF_JohnCosko. I'm sorry, PFF_JohnKosko. John, thanks so much, and I can't wait to talk about these numbers that lead to a victory here one of these days.
Yes, hopefully so. It'll be, you know, it'll be a tough test against the Cowboys, but that's a team that I think they can beat. You know, they're coming off an overtime game that was a tight contest. And final note, go Tribe.
Go Tribe is right. Yes, sir. Go Tribe. All right, Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, we'll be back with more CBD right after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Don't miss the only game day show that takes you on the field before kickoff. Tune into
News 5!
News 5, Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. Join the top dog, Hanford Dixon, Andy Baskin, Matt Wilhelm, and me, Nathan Zagura, at home and on the road. Get an exclusive look inside the building as the team preps for the matchup ahead and get the most up-to-date reports and analysis that only
News 5!
News 5 can provide. Let's bring in our producer, Mott Fontana, right now, and let's get a little after.
After further review.
You guys are getting good with that News 5.
News 5!
I love it.
Thank you.
We kick it off, guys, after further review. Should the NFL change their rules when it comes to overtime? Should they go to college rules?
No. I think the college game is different than the professional game, and they should, for the most part, create the best scenarios for their league. And I thought the tweak about a field goal, the opening possession field goal can't win the football game, was a great change with overtime. And I think right now what we're just finding ourselves, with a lot of parity in the National Football League. There's not a there's a few dominant teams, but there's just a lot of okay or good teams, and they get caught up in a battle. And if it ends in a tie, it ends in a tie. It is what it is.
It is what it is. Is what it is, Matt Wilhelm. I agree with you. I agree with you that it shouldn't go to the college rules, but I disagree with you that ties are acceptable. I think that ties should be gone from the game. These guys work too hard. They risk too much.
Then win the game.
Just keep going until you do have a winner. After the first possession, all it takes is one team to get a field
but
goal.
But I feel like you're diluting the emphasis on player safety by creating more opportunities for guys to get hurt, especially as the season goes on.
How many times does this happen that a game would go beyond overtime?
I'm not the analytics guy. You are.
It's
tell me.
Like maybe once a year.
There were three this weekend.
Yeah, but there were two so far this year. There haven't been ties in for like 4 years.
Okay.
So it's not.
Cowboys-Eagles almost ended in a tie.
Didn't.
Bengals-Redskins did.
Yes.
And what was the third this weekend?
It was Cardinals. It was last Sunday night, Cardinals-Seahawks 6-6.
Okay, there you go. Yes.
I say play until there's a victor.
After further review.
All right, guys. Andre Johnson, recently retired. Hall of Famer or not?
Hall of Famer. I think so. I don't like the fact that he bounced around the way he did and didn't produce for any football team, really, the Colts or the Titans, towards the end of his career. He'll always be remembered as a Texan. He will be remembered as essentially the Houston Texans franchise for 5 solid years before.
Is he the best player to ever play for the Texans,
yes.
Including J.J. Watt?
Correct. Yes, he is.
Is he a Hall of Famer? Absolutely. Is he a first ballot Hall of Famer? Probably not, given the way that they disrespect the position of wide receiver. But yes, I believe Andre Johnson is a Hall of Famer going forward. And I think he's one of the best in the Texans. You know, Arian Foster hangs it up. Andre Johnson, a lot of fantasy people certainly know that that was a golden era for that Houston Texans team.
After further review.
In honor of Wade Phillips and his alleged non-broken leg, what's the greatest sideline collision you've ever seen?
I want to say, I don't remember exactly which one, but my favorite, I'll give you that. My favorite sideline collisions are for the guys that are holding up the big plastic boom microphones to be able to catch the sound there.
The parabolic dish.
Correct. When they're not paying attention to the football game and just aimlessly staring out into who knows where, and they get blasted.
Did Duke do that on Sunday? Somebody did on Sunday in the Browns.
Somebody did, yes. Yeah. I don't remember who it was.
I don't remember a great sideline one. I know that the parabolic mic got knocked out yesterday. Is that what you were talking about on Sunday?
Yeah.
And Jim Donahoe was talking about the mic was like bouncing around, which I thought was pretty humorous. I don't remember any great ones. What about the guy? Wasn't there the guy on the Jets, their strength coach, who tripped somebody?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll go for that one. That
was not a collision, though. Sideline antics.
Their shin would beg to differ.
Okay.
After further review.
All right, guys, this is a fact or fiction question in after further review. I apologize ahead of time. Three teams from the AFC West will make the playoffs this year.
Fiction. I think two will get out.
I think it'll be two, but I could see why you think three, potentially only one from the North, only one from the South. And in the East, can the Bills do it? I think it's a 50-50 proposition because I think Oakland and Denver are going to make the playoffs. So can Kansas City be better than the second place team in the South, North, and East? I think it's certainly feasible. And that'll do it
that
for after further review. Yes, when we come back, Sir Andrew Gribble in his already decked out in his Indians regalia, getting ready for World Series Game 6. We will talk with him next.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Sir Andrew Gribble here in the Dog Bowl. But let me remind you that the Coach Hugh Jackson Show is every Thursday night at 7 o'clock. Join me as the host along with Coach Jackson as we break down game film from the previous game. We preview the matchup ahead and also get to know the players better in one-on-one interviews with Matt Wilhelm and Dustin Fox. You can't catch it Thursday. You have another chance every Saturday at noon only on
News 5!
News 5! Gribble, give me a News 5. News 5. Come on, Gribbs. It's World Series Game 6. News 5!
Can't even hear him. The mic's out. The mic's not even on.
Well, good, because I don't want anybody to hear that. All right, Gribbs, now give it to me.
News 5.
News 5. There it is. Well, Gribbs, all right, you're talking about World Series. Let's just jump right in there before we get into, of course, Jamie Collins, et cetera. But how are you feeling right now?
I'm good, and I'm a little nervous, but I think it'd be bad if I was confident. So I'm still, you know, it's after you lose that Game 5, you never want – once you feel like you're taking control of a series, you never want to give that team momentum, and I think the Cubs have a little bit of it. I will say this, though. The Cubs won that game on Sunday without really hitting well. I still don't think they're hitting well against Indians pitching. In that, they had one inning where they got a home run and then a few cheap hits that kept things going and got three runs, and that was enough. And I think that they've perhaps burned the Aroldis card. I don't know. I mean, I know he's had the day off.
That was quite
but that
the
was
performance.
That was a long effort from him. I never want to see him again. He's the kind of pitcher. He's the kind of pitcher that the Indians just do not hit well, and I don't want to see him on the field again. Don't let them go to Aroldis Chapman.
So what's the likelihood that he goes more than an inning tonight? Because I know they were talking about his pitch max. I think he would pitch 38. His max in his career was 46. But three innings of work is a lot of work for him.
It's a lot.
Especially throwing the heat that he throws.
I mean, I think for the Cubs, ideally, they think they'd hope just use him for one inning in a save situation
correct.
And take it to Game 7. I think that would be their ideal scenario. I just think if you're the Indians, you just never let it get to that point. Don't get in a point where you're in a close game and they can go to him with the lead.
And how about the fact the guy comes in and is still throwing gas?
Yeah, I mean, that's his thing. I'm
saying after all those pitches, the most he did, that last at-bat went 102, 102, 101.
Isn't it, though, like with certain pitchers, though, that's kind of how they roll? I mean, I remember Verlander would always be throwing 99, 100 into the seventh or
right.
eighth inning. I
mean,
that's when they're like almost the loosest.
Dude, I would lift my front leg as he started his windup. If you're throwing heat like 101.
There was a kid back in the day when I played back in my Little League career named Eric Wolf. And Eric Wolf, when we were 12, looked like a 25-year-old, like, grown man. And you remember in Little League, the pitcher's mound's even closer. I think it's only 45 feet instead of 60. And he was throwing, this is no joke, I'm not making this up, he was throwing 75 miles an hour, okay, as a 12-year-old, from a 45-foot mound. Like, you literally just, as soon as you knew he was, like, about to release, you just started swinging, and you hoped that your bat was wherever he threw the ball because you couldn't even see it.
Yeah, I mean, I always love the Little League World Series. They always do it the feels like, almost like a heat index type thing with how fast it really is.
Yeah,
and that's my favorite thing about
what's
that.
What's the conversion? Do you know? It, like, what would I don't know 75, if there's like a, what would 75 feel like?
I would
like?
Think it's getting near 95, 100, I would think.
Yeah, I would imagine.
I would imagine. All right, let's talk for a second now. Jamie Collins, coming to the Browns, you have some update on what he will wear. Is that public or is that not yet public?
I think
public?
So. I mean, yeah, I think he's going to wear number 51.
Okay.
And that's on the depth chart, I think, that just came out as well. So,
where was he listed on that depth chart, Grips?
I can pull it up right now. I think for now, I mean, these depth charts, it's unofficial,
yes,
and
sure,
we'll see where they work him in. But I think he slotted in at inside linebacker, the place behind Tank Carter and Christian Kirksey there. But I would imagine we're going to see him a little bit more regularly on starting this Sunday. It's just a matter of how fast you want to work him in, how many snaps you want to give him within the defense. But he seems like a guy who's been in the league long enough. Get him up to speed and hopefully plug and play and let him start making plays for you. I would be surprised if he plays like every snap on Sunday, but I think he's going to get a good amount of snaps.
Was your reaction the same as mine when we were saying that? And I'm like, Jamie Collins?
Yeah, I was totally stunned. I mean, I was totally floored, and I think it was a good feeling. I mean, you want to finally – you've started stockpiling these picks and putting yourself in position to give away these picks for talented players who kind of fit the mold you're looking for, which is kind of right in line with where Jamie Collins is in his career, about to enter his second contract, really start entering what you hope is the prime of his career. And I think even though he's going from a 7-1 team to an 0-8 team, I think with that contract looming in the offseason, he's going to be plenty motivated. I think he's going to
Besmirched a tremendous deal on the way out by either former Pats employees or Twitter.
Yeah, certainly no shortage
of
motivation.
He cares about Twitter.
He certainly cares about, I would imagine, a former Patriot employee who is supposedly Bill's boy, who was fired by the Patriots.
Wait,
by
would I care if I know I'm going to an organization that has $50 million to spend in a cap year when essentially I can name a price and they're most likely going to give me that?
If you wouldn't go like a little bit of chip on your shoulder, like I'm going to show these dudes talking all this trash?
Not really.
Really? I wouldn't. I'd be like, I'm going to shut these guys up. And then I'm going to get paid, and then I'm going to drop my money on them. Like, blah, 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 blah.
And they could very well likely go, we just got another Super Bowl ring, and yeah, you got your money.
Oh, I bet you he is hoping that whoever it is that goes in the lineup in his spot blows a play somewhere in the playoffs that costs them a victory.
Sure.
And he's going to be like, ha, 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 ha.
But I would say for the short term, though, it's just an immediate injection of talent on a defense that's
absolutely
struggling.
And it needs
Yeah, and I think you just need – he's a playmaker. I think the stat that jumps out with me with him is the forced fumbles. I mean, the knack for what he can do. I mean, that's, you know, people want to talk about career sack numbers. A forced fumble changes the game more than a sack does. And I think he's got a real knack for that, a real knack for the ball. And then when he gets the ball in his hands, when he forces a turnover, he can make something happen with it because he's just, I think, kind of a freakish athlete at that position. And I think that I think within the confines of a Ray Horton defense, which out of its base is a 3-4, I think we'll see him more on the outside and disrupting the passer than he was asked to do in New England out of a 4-3.
Again, we got to get a guy like him on the field. So who immediately, and I know we've mentioned Joe Schobert as one, who else do you think this could affect from a playing percentage standpoint?
I mean, I'm just looking at the outside now, maybe put a guy like a Cam Johnson. And then if you're looking down the road, if Nate Orchard is the guy that comes off IR reserve, he's another one out there as well. But if he could very well be played on the inside. So then you look at guys like DeMario Davis, Christian Kirksey, those are guys that are predominantly playing every snap in the game. Maybe they take a few snaps less when you're working in Collins on the inside as well. And maybe this allows you to do some different things out of the nickel package and getting an athlete in position, like as he's called, a monster back that can really be put all over the field. I just think the possibilities are endless with him, and I just think he makes you better. I think that's the plain
yes
and simple. A player on that roster, adding it to it does not make you worse. It makes you better.
And he's 27. He's at the right age so that he could be here for a while if the Browns decide they want to lock him up. And if they don't, when he leaves, they will get a compensatory pick. So they really aren't losing. There's no doubt. There's no potential risk here for the Cleveland Browns.
Right. And I think that everyone's digging into the reasons why New England would part with him. And I think that I understand why they're doing that, but I think the focus should be here in Cleveland on what the Browns are getting for this. It's I think a very mild risk for a major payout for this organization building toward the future. And if you can lock up a guy like him, that affects your draft strategy, I think, going forward. You don't need to use a pick on a player of his type coming out of the college level because you've got a young player set in that spot. So I just think it's a good all-around move, and I'm excited to see what he can do.
I'm excited to see what he can do as well. That being said, the deadline now, an hour and 17 minutes. There are people saying that there are, you know, some stuff's heating up here. Nothing really with the Browns. We aren't hearing anything there other than Tremont Williams apparently being on the block. I don't know that he would have takers at his salary level at this point, but that's a name that's out there. Do you expect any other Browns moves before this deadline?
I don't, and I think that's largely not because of what I know, but more of a byproduct of the NFL trade deadline that it typically tends to be all talk and very little action, because I think that teams still moving forward, there's just a value of draft picks among organizations that they just don't want to part with them, no matter how in the mix they are in the playoffs. I think that it was talked about with a lot of people talking about Seattle and their interest in Joe Thomas, but they just talk about how they're probably reluctant to part with draft picks too, even though they really need someone like that. So I just think that it tends to be all talk, very little action, and I'd be surprised if there's anything monster around the league within an hour.
I threw out a number between 35 and 40 snaps for Jamie Collins against the Dallas Cowboys. What is your projection on how quickly he can pick up this defense? Everyone knows the player that he is. And then, again, what type of impact will he have in this Dallas game?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're looking at about a 65-70 snap game, I'd say that is probably a good number.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's just what kind of standard are you going to hold. It's a matter of, are you going to be disappointed if he doesn't come out and get a couple sacks? I mean, I just think he's just going to be a better player.
I think
player.
That's the fans' expectation,
right,
but
yeah.
Not the coaches.
Yeah, I just think you want to see him comfortable. You want to see him fly around and do what he's got God-given ability to do. And I think that it's hard to come in. You would know this better than anyone, just to come in and pick up a defense right away.
We talked about that.
But,
there's a lot
I mean,
of learning.
I just think, like, you want to see him comfortable. And I think that's what the day and night getting him ready for this moment. I think that the more comfortable he gets, the more snaps he'll play, and then the more you'll see from that athleticism. So, I mean, maybe you'll see a little bit of uncomfortableness, but I still think he'll be a guy that just stands out.
But again, Jamie Collins uncomfortable as a 6 or 7, you know, 5 or 6 year veteran in a very productive football player. Uncomfortable is going to be better than maybe some of our young players comfortable in
right.
defense.
Sure, this guy, come on, this guy's a pro, an all pro, second team all pro. Pro Bowl to me is an overrated designation in today's NFL because guys opt out, et cetera, and anybody can make it. Second team all pro is legit. That is a legit designation for what he did last year, and this guy's going to come in and he is going to make this defense better. And if you're looking at this football team, they have been ahead in 4 of the 8 games in the second half and have 0 wins. So improving the defense, I think, can go a long way to actually improving the bottom line, which is winning football games, which is what Hugh Jackson wants to do.
And we want to talk about, this might be a more boring aspect of what makes Jamie Collins good, but his coverage ability against running backs, against tight ends is very good. And I think that, you know, the Browns specifically have had issues covering tight ends, and maybe we've kind of forgotten about it because the last 2 weeks we played the Jets, who don't really have a tight end at all, and then the Bengals, who are breaking in an injury.
They're up to 30
Tyler
yards
Eifert.
Receiving,
so,
by the way,
yeah,
for their tight ends.
So you come back this week with the Cowboys, Witten is a potential Hall of Fame tight end at that position. You're going to need someone that steps up and can guard these tight ends, and I think he's one of the more qualified guys to do that right away and has shown he can do it.
Well, I think all of a sudden you look at the nickel package. You know, you've got 2 linebackers now who could cover and 2 linebackers now who can blitz effectively in Kirksey and Collins, and I think that gives Ray Horton a lot more flexibility out there. Obviously, there are issues on the back end of this defense, and I don't think those are going away anytime soon, but it does seem to me that you have a lot more flexibility now early on with your defense in those nickel packages to what you want to do with those linebackers, how you want to exploit those matchups. And by the way, it's going to make you more formidable, as we saw time and time again that Jets game. They get in the 3rd and long, they'd run a draw. You have Tracy Howard in there basically playing as your second, your dollar linebacker. Now all of a sudden you're going to have a real linebacker in there in those run fits.
Yeah, I mean, you could make the offensive equivalent. Say, you know, this team might have a pretty solid bearing with wide receivers right now when you get Corey Coleman back. But say someone's like, hey, you want to put Julio Jones on this team for a game? It's going to make you better. You're going to find ways to put guys in places to make you better. I think that I'm not comparing Julio Jones to Jamie Collins. It's apples to oranges. But you get a really good player to put him on your defense, you'll find a way to make him work in.
Even if
he plays a position that maybe one of your better defensive players plays, you work around it and make it work.
Let me ask you this, Gribbs. Cody Kessler out of the concussion protocol. Does he return in your mind? Does he start if he's healthy?
You would think so, but it's up in the air. I think at this point, Hugh really wasn't tipping his hand on Monday.
No, not at all.
I can see the argument for both at this point. I think if you can channel what Josh McCown has done in the first halves of the two games he started this year, that's the best this offense has looked all season.
Do you wonder if part of the reason those second halves fall off is just the wear and tear in his body, and as the game goes on and he absorbs hits, he doesn't play as well? Because his first halves and his second halves were as night as day as Ryan Fitzpatrick's first half was bad and his second half was good.
Yeah, and I really think that the week two you almost have to throw out because he really was hurt in that game. I mean, this so it's almost like he's just had one truly bad second half while healthy. So it's hard to say, but I think what he adds to your offense with the kind of the veteran presence and how he can stretch the field, that's something I think you take into consideration if you're trying to get this. You know, obviously everyone wants to see Cody develop and see what they've gotten him, but at the same time, you're trying to win a game. You're 0-8, and I think that it comes down to who's going to give you the best chance to win, and that's something they have to decide, because I think you can make cases for both at this point.
You can. I think, you know, all the numbers, completion percentage, efficiency, interception percentage, rating, all favor Kessler at this point. But to Matt's point, I bet Hugh Jackson feels like everything in his playbook is at his disposal with McCown, where right. It might not yet be with Kessler.
I mean, that's a different game if that deep ball to Terrell is maybe a yard shorter or something like that. I mean, that changes the whole game. And I think how that stretches the defense can really just impact what you want to do all around offensively.
Yes, indeed. All right, Gribbs. One of the articles you wrote this week, or that's on the ClevelandBrowns.com, Browns Mobile, it's very good. Keeping track of the rookies, where they are all at, and how they're doing. And a lot of people have liked that. I've seen some Twitter feedback on that. What else can people get into this week?
We got an update on the website now on kind of following all of our draft picks.
Yep.
That's going on. It's all over the map. I mean, the Browns have dealt maybe four or five draft picks since the big Eagles trade. And I think kind of bring it back home that this team still has a lot of draft picks, even though they got rid of this one that's a pretty good draft pick that they're giving up for 2017. There's a lot more balls in play, and that's why I wouldn't rule out going in the future another trade like this where you can package picks to get assets in terms of talented players in this team.
Yeah, and that's what they need, more talent, and they're making that step. Jamie Collins, step one there before the next draft. Thanks so much, Gribbs.
No problem.
All right, we'll be back. Final thoughts wrapping it up here on this Tuesday of CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Wrapping it up here on this Tuesday, the Browns return to work tomorrow. Matt and I will hand out our midseason awards for this football team as well. And obviously, you know, point out where there is room for improvement, which obviously when you're sitting where the Browns are, there are lots of areas for improvement. Hopefully Jamie Collins can come in and help with some of that. By the way, you can gear up for the 2016 season, including all the very cool Salute to Service stuff right now, as this will be the Brown Salute to Service gear. Matt William has the hat. Milhelm has the hat on right now.
Killing.
Looking sharp. Very sharp. And you can do that at the Pro Shop at First Energy Stadium.
Where I got mine.
Shop a wide variety of all new gear, including hats, T-shirts, jackets, custom jerseys, and more. Season ticket members, remember to swipe your membership card to receive your exclusive discount and a chance to win great prizes. The Pro Shop's open 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day. Or call 440-824-3427 for more information. So let's just wrap it up. Go Tribe. I saw a stat just come across the wire that when Allen and Miller pitch in the same game this year, they are 24-0. So let's pitch them.
So Tomlin into the fifth.
Miller.
6-7-8. Miller. Miller time. Close it out. Cody Allen, ninth inning.
Boom.
Dancing in the streets.
Bada boom. Realest guys in the room. How you doing? All right. Delete the Cubs today, Tribe. Rally together. Should be a great day in Cleveland sports history when the Tribe gets it done. Want to thank John Costco for being with us today and Mike Reese for being with us as well. For our producer, Matt Fontana, Matt Wilhelm, I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily.
On ESPN 850 WKNR Cleveland. Go Tribe!
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.